Hello and welcome to the Mercenary Star Podcast. My name is Seth, and I am your host. The Mercenary Star Podcast is, of course, highlighting the storied mercenary units in the BattleTech universe. And today I am joined by Mario Brute Garzolini, returning once again. Let's see, the last time you were here, it was episode 6 and the Avanti's Angels.
That's right.
Thanks for joining me. We obviously are super excited for this 22nd episode. We are covering the Black Thorns, a controversial unit in some aspects, I guess you could say. you know, it's a fun unit. I really liked them growing up, reading about them back in the day. But, you know, it's definitely something that some people have strong opinions on.
That's true. And thanks for having me back again. I'm happy to talk about one of the fun units I used to read about when I was younger.
Absolutely. Okay, so a couple questions. What have you been playing lately? Anything new as far as, you know, maybe what faction you're playing or, you know?
Yeah, sure. The last thing I got really involved in was Adepticon. I got to meet up with a lot of the Wolfnet guys and a lot of people I hadn't got to see in a little while. And actually didn't do too bad there. I got to play with, of course, my pride and joy, the Hell's Horses. But as of late, I have been kind of dabbling in the Fire Mandrills. I find them to be kind of a fascinating and underrepresented is maybe not quite
oh definitely
the right term, but
most of the homeworld clans
light, so.
Yeah, most of the homeworld clans are underrepresented, let's just put it that way.
oh yeah and I got to read into the lore. I've had a list for a little while, but I kind of started getting back into it because there's some really neat things that you can do with some of the old homeworld units that just kind of got wiped out. So
yeah, absolutely.
Something fun for later this year.
Well, that's cool. I look forward to seeing pictures of your Fire Mandrill mechs later.
Yeah.
But you know what? Let's get into our topic for the day, the Blackthorns. They are a mercenary unit that, like I said, they had a lot going for them in the 90s. Like, they, you know, they had... multiple novels. We'll talk about them in a minute. They had a dedicated source book for them. It was, you know, like they weren't nothing. Like, we've got bigger units with longer history that have way less.
Oh yeah, they were moving on up for sure. They had a lot of fun war coming out with them, and they kind of exploded onto the scene, and things kind of took a turn for the worse.
Yeah, they didn't survive some of the real world happenings, that's for sure. All right, well, hey, yeah. Let's get into our presentation. If you are listening to the podcast and you want to follow along with what we are talking about and showing on the YouTube, go over to YouTube, check us out. It is... YouTube.com/ you know, at the Mercenary Star Podcast, and you can check out all the cool artwork that we're going to show off and everything. But also, you will see our sponsor for the show, Fortress Miniatures and Games. We are super thankful to them, and so yeah, there's a link in the show notes. We'll talk about them more later in the shout outs, but you'll get to see their cool little splash screen. But yeah, let's go ahead and get into the presentation, shall we? So, the Blackthorns, okay? They were... I mean, for as they were a company size unit, first of all. And they were founded in 3054 by Jeremiah Rose. All right. Great name. But yeah, Mario, tell us, where did he come from? Where's he out of?
Well, Jeremiah was actually born to a high-level technician in the Northwind Highlanders by the name of Cornelius Rose. And, oh, his mother's name escapes me at the moment. His mother was a battle mech pilot. She piloted a Thunderbolt, Marie Rose. That's who it was.
Yes.
So he had kind of a background in the Northwind Highlanders, and it was kind of expected that he would, you know, follow in the Highlander tradition. But he ended up having some problems with Dad and broke off on his own and joined the Comm Guard.
So yeah, he got really ticked off at Hans Davian because his mom died in the Worf 39. And so, you know, like everyone, let's just go ahead and blame the person at the top.
Right.
And he ran off to join the Comm Guard instead of going into the Northern Highlanders. So, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of...
because, you know, the Comstar and the Comm Guard during the War of 39, they were not like... I guess that would have been when they were like heavily recruiting, but it was very hush hush, and we don't really have much about that time period for them. The closest we get is like glimpses of Terra and all the mechs, you know, during Hans and Melissa's wedding, and then also the glimpse of some of the, you know, Comm Guard people that were on Terra, that they're like, well, surely these guys are mercenaries. They're very rough around the edges kind of thing. They don't seem like Comstar alkalites, right? You know, but that's it. That's really the only kind of glimpse we have into it. And that was in the, 28? So, 27?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, for the most part, Comstar only, I believe they negotiated into their contracts at some point in the earlier years to put like lances and companies as, you know, guardians to their HPG facilities, but they really didn't have like a big army presence. It was more like just, you know, small mercenary unit looking kind of operations, but truth of the matter was it was the Comm Guard army.
Well, so that would have been after the Fourth Succession War, whenever they came out of the the Federated Commonwealth came out of the interdiction by Comstar.
Yeah. Right after the War of 39.
Well, that would have been before the War of 39.
No, wait. Before, it would have been before.
So it would have been in the 30s, in the early 30s, when the Fourth Succession War ended. So, because the War of 39 was Hans attacking again. And then Theodore actually, you know, fought him back because he had taken over by then. At least he hadn't really taken over, but he was the catalyst for scaring Hans enough to pull back. Otherwise, Hans would have decimated the Draconis Combine.
Yeah.
Because they did not have...
Definitely all about tearing him up.
Yeah, they didn't have the... I guess they did have some of the Comstar mechs at that point, but they were still like crippled. Jeremiah Rose ran off and joined the Comm Guard, which again is just, it's curious. Like, did he go there intentionally to join them, or did he join Comstar and then they were like, oh, you're from Northwind? Oh, you're from a mech warrior family? We can use you, you know, like, we don't know how that went down. But he was there for a long time.
I'd like to think that he was probably recruited because they recognized, you know, there's an aptitude or a talent here. Or he came from that kind of lifestyle, so surely he knows more than your common guy just off the street.
Yeah, Probably. So yeah, anyway, he was part of Comstar and was a Comguard mech pilot. He fought on Tukid. He did not appreciate his time on Tukid. rather, I should say he came off Tukid hating Comstar and hating the clans. Because
yeah, and that was kind of a, I was gonna say that was kind of a slow burn too, because he was stationed on Luthien during the Smoke Jaguar and Nova Cat attack. When the Dragoons were sent to help. Yeah, but they requested the assist, but they were not allowed. So it was his first taste of being kind of held back by a Comguard high command.
Yeah, and then the fact that on Tukid, he essentially was, his whole unit died. and it wasn't just that he was involved in fighting two or three clans, actually. The last of which was Clan Wolf, and they just destroyed him. So, but he felt like he was kind of hung out to dry by the Comguard command. And so he left Comguard and went back to... He couldn't take his mech with him. Actually, his mech was destroyed. He piloted a shootist on Tukid, which hadn't been seen in, you know, decades. You know, hundreds of years, actually. Yeah. So that was a kind of cool new mech, which we'll talk about later. But he goes home to Northwind and he thinks, oh, I'll get some of my family to he basically wanted to come home and get a task force from the Highlanders to go fight the clans. And he gets rejected pretty harshly. And in no small part due to his father, who's not even a mech warrior, but who was like a very prestigious, you know, technician who came in and gave basically a speech against his own son. He was basically banned from getting any active Northwind Highlanders from joining him. And so the only people he can actually recruit from is family. And so who are the two people that go with him?
Oh, that would be Rihanna Rose, his younger sister, who was also top of her class and happened to be lucky enough to score a battle mech, and his younger cousin, Angus, I believe it's Lockhart, joined up with him. And he was a Valkyrie pilot that was known to have a little bit of skill. So
yeah,
that was slim pickings, but that's what he was able to pick up.
Hey, I mean, three people.
You gotta start somewhere.
That's a start, right? So, the only problem, not the only problem, but a major problem that Jeremiah Rose did have, though, was that he was dispossessed. Which, if you've read any BattleTech lore, you know that's the most horrible thing to be as a mech warrior, right? Dispossessed.
Yeah.
But he has a plan, right? He has a plan. He gets Rihanna and he gets Angus to come with him off Northwind, but he sends them to Outreach to create a mercenary unit and start recruiting and start checking out potential employers. And he's like, I'm going to go to Solaris and I'm going to win myself a battle mech. You know, actually, I think he maybe thinks he's going to go buy a battle mech is what he's going to do. And he can't buy a battle mech. And so he ends up having to basically join some low-level Solaris competitions to try to get a battle mech.
Yeah, it's the classic way to start a new company is gambling.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Especially in the Inner Sphere. But he ends up being forced into a lesser stable, And he kind of blackmails slash injures a warrior in order to take a mech and join in a battle, essentially, and kind of hijacks the situation so that he can try to either get money for a mech or buy a mech or like basically win the mech kind of thing. And the person that he like basically like knocks unconscious Batticus O'Shea, who later joins him, but he replaces Batticus. He fights with Esmeralda, who is another pilot who will eventually join him, but he pilots a charger. And it wasn't a normal charger, which I feel like was a super rare thing, but it was a charger with an LRM 20 and 4 medium pulse lasers.
Yeah, it was one of the combined upgrades that was kind of like a bridging the gap between the 1A1 and what would end up becoming like one of the Hatamoto Chis.
Yeah.
So yeah, it had the 400XL and it had the double heat sinks and it had an Artemis, made it up to the LRM rack and it could move. Oh, and it had jump jets. So I mean, it could run, shoot, and jump pretty effectively.
I mean, a little underpowered, but still, that's a great assault scout mech.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, going from a nil mech to a Charger 3K, not a bad deal.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he wins that. He ends up bringing Batticus and Esmeralda with him. Batticus doesn't have a mech because Jeremiah basically stole his Charger, which wasn't really his anyway. But and then Esmeralda comes with him, and she has a Warhammer, which, you know, love the Warhammer. But they link up with Rihanna and Angus, and they form the unit. And all of these events, by the way, are in the first novel, which I forgot to mention. There are two novels. The first one is Main Event by James D. Long, and it was written in 1993 or published in 1993. And then the second one was DRT, which was... I forgot the year that it was written now. It was 94. So it was a year later.
94.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah. And they're both covering the Clan Invasion era. So, but yeah, so, Main Event, it's again, all about the creation of the Blackthorns and their first contract. So they go to Outreach. They have a little scuffle with some Wolf's Dragoons. They are supposed to be using like powered down, powered down lasers and, you know, the fake missiles. You know, what would it be? Like augmented reality missiles? Because they're not real missiles. It's just the computer telling you that they got hit by missiles. But the
powder charges.
Yeah. But the Wolf Dragoons commander, and the reason they're fighting him is because the Wolf Dragoons are like whoever they were talking to basically was a jerk. But he was piloting an Annihilator. Not a small mech.
Yeah. No.
But he, basically the Wolf Dragoons pilot initiated like melee with them, and Esmeralda punched him in the cockpit and almost killed him. And so yes. The whole match with the Wolf Dragoons was frozen and all their mechs were turned off by the Wolf Dragoons authority. And then they had an investigation and they were like, nope, you weren't at fault. It was our guy. And so Jamie Wolf actually talks to Jeremiah Rose and is like, you're clear, you know, kind of thing, which is funny that they actually let him talk to Jamie Wolf.
Yeah, I think that kind of maybe is kind of a fun cameo, but it also like you know, it was there. There was a I forget the book, but you know, Jamie Wolfe, you know, what affects one of us affects us all. So I mean, he took it very personal.
Well, yeah, in Wolfpack, sure this was it was in Wolfpack.
Yeah. Yep. High, kind of a high profile. Oops.
And this, and it was kind of during this time, honestly, because it was after Two Kid when Wolfpack happened. Yeah. Now I'm trying to remember when Wolfpack happened, actually.
That's a good point.
When it was set.
He might have been there with Time to Kill.
Right. And it might have been like set during that time. So Wolfpack was written in 92. Yeah, and it covers the time between 53 and 55. So that is exactly why Jamie Wolfe was there and was saying, you know what? If we mess up, we got to own it. And so because he was banned from being a leader, but he could do all the administrative stuff during this time. So that's okay. I did not ever realize that those timelines crossed appropriately, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really neat connection, and I hadn't made it until now. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So Jamie Wolfe is on Outreach having to only be an administrator because he is banned from being the leader of the Dragoons right now. So,
And having a black eye incident like that, I mean, with Jamie Wolfe already being in the hot seat because of another Mech Warrior's poor decision making.
Yeah.
Might be the time to go through and weed out the other ones that are making bad decisions.
Well, and that's what he did say in the book. He did say that he would be taken care of, like the Wolf Dragoons pilot. So anyway, but they get through that and they go, they end up getting a contract for, and it's kind of like the bottom of the barrel contract. It's like the only one they have available. And it's for this planet that... Borghese, I had a AI audio book reader pronounce it Borghese. I was like, okay, cool. So you know, but they go to this planet for their first contract, and basically, his sister is the one who came up with the name Blackthorns as well. So that's kind of cool, little tidbit. But they have to end up fighting off, they have to basically, they get betrayed by the government of Borghese and, have to fight off a demi company of mechs from the Borghese, militia. And, they have to do that. And then they have to fight off some clans that showed up who were invited by the traitorous Borghese government. And so they end up, you know, it's quite an adventure, honestly. You know, it's supposed to be this frontline world. It's above the Tukiid line, so they could be raided, but because the Federated Commonwealth the Federated Commonwealth did not garrison it. And so the government was like, we need somebody. And so they got the Blackthorns, which was a demi company. They weren't even a full company yet.
Yeah. Cause they only picked up a couple of people on Outreach before they left. And so, yeah, they show up, they, you know, have a parade into town and basically come under, verbal fire right out the gate, is half the government's not on board with it. And and then they've got the home planet hero that is with the militia, and things kind of escalate.
Yeah, and through the book you eventually find out that the hometown hero was not such a hero, and he had a lance of five mechs and basically was holding all of them hostage. And so one of them eventually, basically one of them, Antioch Bell, who pilots a Banshee, he turns on the traitorous Borghese commander who is piloting a Marauder 2, and helps out Jeremiah Rose, and then they fight the clans who had just arrived on planet. And they pretty much like catch the clanners completely unaware, and are able to kind of steamroll them a little bit. But they do get some pretty great salvage from it.
Oh yes, they do.
They salvaged a Warhawk, 2 Timberwolf Primes, and a Dasher D. A Warhawk Prime. So, they get 4 clan mechs out of the deal.
And a Banshee.
Yes, and a Banshee, which was pretty much fresh, too, because Antioch Bill hadn't been really fighting much in that, but... Yeah, so they grew. The rightful Borghese government basically came in and they became they finished their contract with them essentially, and then they that was kind of the end of book one and main event, and then book two they are looking for another shot at the clans. Which again, the whole time, Jeremiah Rose, he's just, it's literally a revenge tour for him. Like, he just wants clanners to be, he just wants to fight and kill clanners, kind of thing. So, in the second book, I was kind of like, you know, that's not a really healthy way to be running a mercenary unit.
Yeah. The whole, I'm on a... Yeah, he's just on the path of self-destruction. His whole goal is just to kill more clanners to avenge his fallen comrades.
He
causes you to make some bad decisions.
It did. But the second book, DRT, which stands for Dead Right There, which is a really small little line in like right in the middle of the book. So DRT... They essentially go from the Federated Commonwealth to accepting a contract for House Karita and the Draconis Combine. Because during this time, Theodore Karita is actually like, you know what, let's get some mercenaries back in here. So they get hired and they travel to a pretty far forward world. Where do they end up?
I believe it was Crouch Evil.
That's where their second contract was. They actually got a contract for Walcott.
Oh yeah, you're right. Walcott. So Walcott was one of those famous worlds that was it Hohiro Kurita.
Yeah,
that led the defense of Walcott,
and they tricked
they tricked the Jaguars into ending their campaign on Walcott, and Walcott became a staging area. Basically for anything out in clan space for attacking that the clanners could not.
Yeah.
The clanners could raid Walcott, but they could try and take it.
Yep. They could not invade.
So,
and not only that, but they tricked them into, and they put not only the planet on the line, but they put, they got like 5 or 10 Omnimechs and 5 elemental suits out of the victory too. And so that is why that's why the Draconis Combine actually were the first ones to have Omnimech technology in the Inner Sphere. Because they started reverse engineering that stuff like crazy.
Yes, they got a handful of Omnimechs and by about a company size amount of elemental suits to experiment with.
Yeah,
so that really helped them out. And a relatively safe-ish, fortress outpost.
Right. Behind the lines. So that was one thing that I really appreciated, right? And that was like the clans really take things very literally in certain circumstances, right? It almost makes me think of the way that the first Somerset Strikers, ended in the TV show, because Nikolai Malthus follows the deal to the letter, and he like takes all the people from the planet, even though, he won the planet. And that's, it's another instance where that's the case, right? He basically, they get the, like they win the deal that they can't be invaded, but that didn't mean, you know, they didn't include provisions for raiding or blockading. And so the Smoke Jaguars are just hanging out with warships in space around Walcott, trying to raid and destroy anyone trying to come and reinforce Walcott. And I appreciate that.
Yes, it's a very literal definition of you're not going to, you know, try to take the planet back. Well, okay, well, that doesn't mean we can't shoot things out of the air.
Yeah,
it makes it makes for a very rough attempts at getting to the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I do, again, I appreciate that attention to detail. I feel like James Long did a great job of building that into something that, oh yeah, realistically, yeah, they would totally do that. Especially because they can't go raiding south of the Tukiid line, and this is already surrounded in their space. So it was pretty cool little thing. But yeah, they go to Walcott and they have to, basically they take a contract to go to Walcott, and then they can take a subsequent contract to go raid from Walcott. And so they're essentially forced to do that rather than have to sell one of their Omnimechs to pay for parts for the Omnimechs.
Yeah.
You know, they do get assigned a liaison officer. She is a great pilot and a horrible shot.
Very true.
But she comes along with her dragon. And so they do, you're right. They go to Korchival. They end up for their raid mission. They go to Korchival, and it's a fun failure, fun failing forward adventure, right? Like they didn't really, they didn't actually do what they're, like the raid mission was one of those things where it's like, even if you failed, you still got like half the pay or something. But they, and they got to keep 100% salvage, which was, you know, kind of standard for these like high risk, high reward raids that no one really ever returns from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
yeah, they jumped in. They were supposed to, I think, disrupt production of like,
yeah,
elemental suit factory.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe not the suits, so but the components for them. Yeah.
Yeah. They're supposed to destroy the production facilities of some sort. And, that went right out the window within the moment they hit atmosphere.
Yeah. They essentially had to hot drop early, and their dropship got shot down. So,
but you know, the amount of damage they managed to do anyway along the way,
yeah,
pretty much made up for what they didn't do.
It's true. They did a ton of damage to both. Well, they actually wiped out, like, was it, I don't know, 2 trineries worth of mechs for the garrison cluster.
I think that's about right.
Because they wiped out a star almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. Well, which one of the things that I thought was cool is that the garrison cluster were not actually normal trineries and binaries. They were Novas. They had elementals attached to them. And this was this the first time that we really get a glimpse of a Nova? I think it definitely is in fiction.
If it's not, it's definitely very early on. There's not a lot of discussion.
1992. It was a non-standard formation that they kept talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, they end up having to fight. Oh, and they're fighting against the Novacats, which is pretty cool. Because the Novacats, I don't think, had gotten any, other than Tukiid, they'd not gotten any screen time in the novels. So, and they're fighting against another another survivor of Tukiid. So it's Jeremiah Rose on one side fighting against the other survivor on the Novacat side, what was his name again?
Denard Devereaux.
Devereaux. Great name. But yeah, he was an elemental. And so he was pretty tricky, but he basically wanted, he was a hero for the Novacats, got assigned to this garrison cluster, but then wanted to go to basically go raid Luthien or something. And so he wanted to repair the Blackthorn's dropship and then head, and then basically use it to get out of the system and go off raiding again. So he basically convinces the frontline galaxy that's on planet to give him 10 mechs to put in this, not give him, but put 10 mechs in this dropship that they repair, and they're going to head out. And so it all comes down to them realizing that's what his plan is going to be, and they want to stop him. And so they force a battle. They kind of recapture the dropship and are threatening to blow it up. And then in order to basically save everyone, he challenges the elemental to a circle of equals. And how does that go?
Not particularly well for the elemental. It seems that he is very much your early clan leader. Big on bravado, big on I'm going to beat you senseless and I'm going to win the day. Not real great at thinking about the underhanded things the Inner Sphere warriors will do.
Totally.
And sometimes you take a bath with a toaster.
And, and this is what I found funny, is that the cover of DRT is literally the scene where he fries him with, you know, the kind of thing. So it's almost like the whole cover just gives it away. Also, if you're watching the video, by the way, the covers, I have them up on the presentation. It's amazing old school art for these covers. Yes. But like, they put the elemental in basically just like a banana hammock. I don't know why. Because if you look at the Blackthorns, I'll show you the picture in a minute, but the Blackthorns source book has a black and white drawing, and he looks like he actually has like shoes and shorts on, kind of thing. But, you know, hey, he came up to intimidate Rose, right? Because he was coming to be like, you know, Rose offered to fight him hand to hand, essentially. And he knew he was an elemental, and he shows up to like intimidate him. And again, too, though, like, it's weird, the cover doesn't really show it, but he was basically sitting on the foot of a mech, one of the clan mechs that had been loaded. He flooded the bay with water. And then as soon as the elemental stepped into the flooded pool or the pools of water there, he just tosses out an electric torch and electrocutes the guy. And then he waits about, he says he waits about like a couple minutes for it to run its course, like for the batteries on the portable electric torch to run out, which he said only took about like 6 or 7 seconds, but it was like enough that the guy was just like toast. And then he goes up, he takes a screwdriver, and he like makes sure he's dead. So
yeah, that was,
it was
pretty wild.
Well, and it was funny too, because he also set up a trap. Like he put a bunch of screwdrivers and stuff out, hoping, you know, like as a, almost like a decoy, that like the guy was going to jump out and land on these pointy objects. It was just like, I feel like it was almost like an Indiana Jones sword fight scene, right? Where it's like, the elemental's like, I'm going to destroy you, you know, hua, hua, hua. And then he steps in the water and he just electrocutes him.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. It is like the Indiana Jones. It's like, well, you may be stronger, but I'm smarter. So,
yeah.
And I mean, it's part of how you bargain with the clans. You know, he the Circle of Equals was going to be the dropship.
Yeah.
So anything and available in the dropship could be
anything
utilized.
Available in the dropship. And you know, it's like, that's a difference, right? You look at Phelan, when he's been captured by the clans and indoctrinated by the clans, he has a fight with an elemental in a dropship, but it's like an empty dropship, and it's just like zero G, you know, figure it out, right? This is like, nah, this is like straight up an Innersphere guy. He's going to use Innersphere trickery, and he just toasts him. So, but the reward was that the Blackthorns. Yeah, totally. The reward was that the Blackthorns and all the Blackthorns get to leave on the dropship, and they get to take everything on all the mechs loaded on the dropship. And so they get, which we were talking about, right? It's a Union class dropship. It had been modified to carry 13 mechs, but we don't know what clan Omnimechs were on there other than two Fenrises. And then we also figured in talking earlier that there was at least five Blackthorn mechs that were still functional at the end of the battle. Now, we don't know that they took them all because they had a whole binary of clan mechs and all the parts to fix them.
Yeah, it's hard telling. We know for certain, due to later in the story, the Charger made it, even though the Charger's kind of an anomaly, because the Charger, right from the beginning of landing on this planet, they lose
the Charger.
They're losing people.
They lose the Charger, and they lose the Charger pilot who gets captured.
Yes.
But because she was part of the bargain for the Blackthorns to be able to leave, I supposed that she and her mech were basically released to leave as well, which is why they get the Charger back.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
And that makes sense.
Well, we only say that because of how it was retconned that it was confirmed that they were on another planet later. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that.
And
so.
And they take hideous losses trying to get off world. I mean,
they did.
They lose, let's see, one, two, three. They lose, yeah, basically they make it to the dropship with like five functional mechs maybe out of the company.
Five functional mechs and then two extra, and then three pilots that were dispossessed.
Yeah.
Rihanna,
so
Hog, and
Greta.
No. She technically still had the Charger. Rihanna, Hog, and was the Panther still around? Yeah, the Panther made it. That was the other one.
Made it, I think.
Made it too. The Battlemaster. I don't know if the Battlemaster got taken because it didn't have any legs.
Oh no! Yeah.
So technically, he would have been dispossessed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The Cretan, she was dispossessed. Her dragon got wasted at the end.
Oh yeah, she lost her dragon. She got smoked. Yeah, you're right.
But Jeremiah's like, don't you worry about it. We got some extras. So,
right.
Which fun fact? She is somehow a distant relation to Theodore Cretan. That's why she was able to be a high liaison, but not as weird. A little bit of a weird tie-in, you know, kind of like, why did they make her that way? Other than maybe just to say she was a little bit above the commander on Walcott's authority, but not really. So.
Yeah. And this was her first and pretty much her only chance to prove herself. And then, you know, kind of retired from the mech warrior life after that.
I'm sure. Do we know what happens to her afterwards?
I believe she went to maybe combined intelligence or something like that. I don't think she stuck with being a mech warrior.
I mean, there's literally nothing else about her, so.
Yeah, there's very little. We just know that she was a good pilot, but not.
She was better by the end of it. She was better by the end of it, because they trained her up a little bit. So, but yeah, as you know, as far as Sarna's concerned, or the source books, I mean, like she, I don't know that she would have stayed connected with them per se. I mean, maybe she was on Galadon 5, which we'll get to later. But I don't know. Okay. Well, hey, that's the story of the Blackthorns. Now we're just going to talk a little bit just about them outside of their lore. So again, those are the two books. Check out the covers on the presentation. The Blackthorns did have their own source book, and it's a pretty great campaign source book if you want a campaign to run through. It actually has every battle from both books. It's a pretty great PDF, honestly. But yeah, it has all the mechs that were involved. It has a whole bunch of info about the mechs. It has some good, art. There is, I'll show some of the pictures here in a second. But yeah, it has the scenarios for all of, all of the battles, let's see, including Tukiid, including his campaign battles on Tukiid, which is pretty cool. So, also, this was something that I had overlooked, but all of the characters in the Blackthorns book has the attributes and stats for the MechWarrior RPG. So, it's kind of cool.
That's pretty impressive. You don't see that a lot.
You don't. But I mean, like, it has Rachel McLeod. It has Hog, which the picture for Hog is kind of crazy. It has Ajax. But yeah, it has like all of their skills, like their cryptography, gunnery, interrogation, protocol, small arms. Like it's, I don't know. I think it's awesome. So. I yearn for more BattleTech RPG, and I really hope that the one that they're coming out with is going to be good. So,
me too.
But yeah, so Jeremiah Rose, though, if you're watching the presentation, we got some awesome pictures of him here. There's the original picture on the left, which is black and white. And then there's a picture from BattleTech Legends, the new Legends book, source book, on the right. It's not quite the same. I didn't quite see him as being, like, the one on the left definitely looks a little bit more like a Northwind Highlander, in my opinion, even though it's black and white, but still. You know, it's a good approximation. And then also in the Legends book is his charger, which is, again, that super unique charger. And this was part of the Mercenary Kickstarter. And so the Legends box set from the Mercenary Kickstarter also had... also had his charger. So, yeah, if you can... You can see it. It's the charger that has the LRM-20 and the medium pulse lasers. And yeah, I'm doing a horrible job showing it on the screen, but there it is. I have it. We have Jeremiah Rose, which I did not realize this, but he is a 2-1 pilot. So he is an excellent pilot. And he's a 1 pilot and a 2 gunnery. Yeah.
Wow. Man.
That would be amazing.
Once he gets into a targeting computer aided Warhawk, that would be
this
one
is why,
scary pilot.
This is why it makes sense, right? When he's just targeting things in the book.
Yeah, and just blow it like, oh, I'm going to blow this arm off. Oh,
yeah,
there goes away.
I mean, he pilots in the second book, DRT, he pilots a Warhawk Prime, and he just destroys people in it. And now it makes sense because he's a 2-1. He does have some cool SPAs. He has Inspiring Commander 3, which is that Rose may grant the ability to re-roll a failed attack roll 3 times per scenario. The second roll must be accepted. And he has Marksman.
Cool.
So on top of being a 2-1 and having a targeting computer in the Warhawk, he has Marksman. May make a special aimed shot attack as if using a targeting computer. May only fire one weapon. Or apply an additional -2 to hit modifier if making an aimed shot with a targeting computer. That's amazing.
So
an aimed shot is +4, right?
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I think it's +4 to have an aimed shot, and you have to have a targeting computer to do it. And he gets a -2. And then he gets another -1 because he has a targeting computer. So it's a +1 for him to have an aimed shot in the Warhawk. Holy crap.
Wow. Yeah. He could, if you were playing this in a campaign or wanting to make your friends not like you anymore, you could very easily go around head capping or just shooting legs off with ERPPCs.
Oh my gosh.
Would be pretty horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. So now again, you know, that's him as a pilot card, right? And this is the pilot card from the Legends 2 Force Pack that we got in the Mercenary campaign. But he is in the Charger, but the fact that they threw all that in is because he pilots a Warhawk.
That's the part where it becomes really scary.
Oh my gosh, dude, that's so awesome. His Charger does also have the Alpha Strike card as well. It is 63 points, by the way, because this is Jeremiah Rose's Charger. This is not just a 3K, I don't think. I don't think a normal 3K is 63. I don't know. It has TMM2. Movement 10 inch jumping, 4-5-2 for range. It has 6 armor, 4 structure, case, and indirect fire 1. So it is a skill 2, by the way, because again, this is Jeremiah Rose. This is not just your normal 3K. It's a skill too. So
your typical skill or your typical 3K is going to be 45 PV. I mean, it's no joke as a mech. It's a little soft on the structure, but
it does have his SPAs on the back as well. Which nice. I'm not sure how those work in Alpha Strike exactly. I think the reroll Inspiring Commander still counts. Let's see. The gunner with the SPA is skilled at placing his shots for maximum effect. As long as this unit stands still during its movement phase, any successful weapon attack it executes against a target with its weapon's range will deliver only half damage, rounded down to a minimum of 1 point. But if the attack scores a MOS of 3 or more, what is MOS?
I can't think of what the MOS is off
the
top of my
head. The marksman. That's okay. The marksman also makes an additional hit check against his target. Oh, an additional critical hit check against his target. This critical check is made even if the target still has armor.
It might be margin of shot. So if you like roll a high enough number, then you do additional.
Gotcha.
I don't really play with SBAs, so I'm not real well versed in that.
You know where I could see this coming
they
in?
They can become.
In when we get Battletech Aces and we start having some more campaign play with Alpha Strike. Because I don't feel like there's probably a ton of people who do campaign play with Alpha Strike right now. I think it's going to increase when we get the Aces boxes.
It's a good chance. Yeah, it looks like it could be a lot of fun.
So,
I mean, especially like SPAs are more for your campaign things because
right.
like, when you get an SPA in a competitive game, that could skew things really quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
having a pilot that can just wreck you from long range, like with a charger, that could be really rough.
Yeah. Well, that's Jeremiah Rose. Excellent. I love that, by the way. I kind of want to use him in a game. Mm-hmm. But anyway, right now on the presentation, I'm just kind of throwing up a couple more fun picks from the source book. There is a bunch of pictures of the original crew. We've got Esmeralda, Batticus, Ajax, Hog. I can't remember who the one in the bottom corner is, but yeah, it's pretty good. And then there's a couple other awesome pieces of artwork in there. There's one of him fighting the Hatchet Man. At least I think it's Hatchet Man. And then in the Charger. Yeah. Because he's in the Charger. And then there's a picture of... It's I don't know. It's a little bit... It's definitely a Timberwolf in front of a dropship. But I don't know if it's supposed to be like in... like a scene from one of the books, but yeah, it's pretty cool. But then also, as promised, this is the there's the last image of the final fight where he fries the elemental. Again, in this one, the elemental has shoes on and shorts. He's still in just like his shorts and bare chested and stuff. But Rose is in his shorts and his cooling vest. Which again is a little weird because Rose doesn't wear a cooling vest. Rose has his Star League era cooling flight suit.
Mm-hmm.
So little discrepancy there. That was another fun fact is that Jeremiah Rose, because he was in the Comm Guard, had a Star League. He actually had two Star League era cooling flight suits. So he didn't wear a cooling vest. He had the full flight suit. And the cooling stuff went through his entire flight suit. It was pretty much a priceless artifact as far as things go.
Definitely. And especially when you're considering that, you're using a lot of Intersphere mechs that were using single heat sinks and not super effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. His cooling suit would have been head and shoulders above all the other people he was facing.
Well, and again, like, and that's the thing, too, is that it could basically interface with any cooling system. It was just the suit was what was so expensive. And the helmet. He had a Star League-era helmet. And so, yeah, it's it was, I mean, that would have also helped him in the Warhawk cockpit. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep, a lighter.
All right, well, hey, let's get down to business here and talk about our ideal Blackthorns Force Pack. All right. So why don't you start us off, Brute?
Well, okay. So we talked at length about this, and I know from listening to previous episodes that a repose, a variant, a jumping, and something new. So after we discussed it for a while, and I think that we could definitely use a repose of the Battlemaster. It was used by Hog. It showed up.
Yep.
And fought against the Jade Falcons in the first book, and it made it all the way to the end of the second book. Don't know if they kept it, but a new Battlemaster would be nice to have in a force pack because we currently are only able to get a hold of it in the old game of Armored Combat Box.
Yeah, so that would absolutely be cool. And I love that, and I feel like that's the winner for me too. I would have loved to also potentially have another Warhawk, but I think we've got at least two out there. But you know, again, what's the iconic choice here? And I think the Battlemaster being able to have a second one, from a production standpoint, would definitely make more sense.
Yeah.
So, but then we move on to, we both kind of agreed of a cool variant would be Ajax's Raven. And because of the source book, we know that this is a 1X, which is actually the prototype Raven. So, you know, it would be a little bit different. It also explains Ajax and his funny secretiveness in the books, because he literally absconded from the Capellan Confederation with a prototype Raven. So,
yeah,
that guy.
That takes a lot of guts.
Yeah, and he was a house warrior. I mean, that's no small feat, right?
Yeah, to sneak off with something so advanced at the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's great. I don't know that I've played much with the Raven, but again, I do like it as a mech. I played with it a ton in video games, you know, Mech Commander, the Raven in the cutscene, you know, it's a thing. So.
Oh yeah. Well, and I mean, again, when you go back to like you were talking about Aces before, being able to do campaign play, a Raven would be a pretty powerful piece of equipment for a mercenary unit.
And I think that goes right along with where they're setting us up with the mercenary box set and with Hinterlands, right? We're going to get the Aces box. There's supposed to be four of them actually planned because Hotspot Hinterlands was the Tamar Rising campaign book, essentially. And we're supposed to get more books like Hinterlands, as well as the Aces book. Aces box sets are supposed to go along with them as well. So, I think we're getting a lot Very nice. To set us up for more campaign play. And so I think that'd be awesome. What about jumping?
Well, so this one was kind of tough because they already have a jumping Shadow Hawk that exists, and I feel like there's too many Phoenix Hawks available. But something we don't really have much of is a Valkyrie, which would be Angus Lockhart's Valkyrie, or potentially when Rihanna's Phoenix Hawk was destroyed, what would she maybe get? Yeah. So the idea was, it was the possibility of a Shadow Cat, and we even said, you know, another mech that would have been used by the Nova Cats would have been a Grendel.
You know, yeah.
Mongrel, I think, was the other. Yeah. So, I mean, Valkyrie would be cool because, you know, it's a classic. A lot of people would like it, but if we went with a different route, I think a jumping Shadowhawk, or Shadow Cat, I mean, you kind of get a little bit of that clan flavor of.
Yeah,
you know, something that you run across.
That would have made a lot of sense for the Nova Cats to have at least one Shadow Cat in the hold of the dropship. Again, we don't know. We don't know what they had in there. They were packing for an extended campaign, so probably one of the variants with more lasers or something. I would think.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe like the A that's got the two ER larges and the Streak 6.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. That would be really cool. So
more efficient fighter. Yep.
But the Valkyrie, I do like the Valkyrie. I like it as a mech. And I like it. I like it for the jumping with at least what we know of the lore as well. So, and then the new. This was remembered by me at the very last minute. And it was the Shootist, which... We don't have a new sculpt for the Shootist, I don't believe. And it's not a pretty mech, but it was a pretty decent mech for the time. And it was the mech that Jeremiah piloted on Toolkit.
That is correct. And, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You don't need to be all that pretty when you have an AC-20 for an arm.
That's true. That's true. And you know what's funny too? Again, the source book really is great, honestly. I highly recommend it. I'm pretty sure it was $5 on Callus Games website. And again, it has all of the battles, and then it even has a small TRO in the back of new mechs. And I was gonna ask, somebody correct me in the comments, okay? Get on YouTube and correct me if I'm wrong. But I am wondering if this came out before the TRO that had these other mechs, because it could have, like this. The Blackthorns, let's see, the source book came out in 94, okay? And I don't know, where was the Shadow Cat? Was that in 55?
I think the Shadow Cat was
3055?
I think it might have been 3050.
I mean, no, it wasn't 3050. It was only the original 15 mechs. And that wasn't one of them.
It wasn't one of them.
Mm-mm. I think it was 3055.
I just pulled it up and it says Clan Invasion, but that's also the newer looking stuff. So that's a good point. I'm not sure.
Let's see. Clan Mechs. Yeah, in that one. No, it wasn't even 3055. Was it 30? It had to be 3057 then. 3057?
The record sheet's 3055/3058, and there's 3058. Unabridged record sheets. Technical readout 3058. That's what it is.
3058. Okay. Yeah. So 3058.
That's the one with the bushwhacker on the cover.
Oh, it's my favorite one, honestly. Okay. So yeah, guess what?
The guy's all running for the bushwhacker and the fire.
Technical readout 3058 came out in 95. So these really were, this was the first time that we saw and again, it says new mechs in a giant page in thing. We get the Grendel, a 45-ton mech, you know, clan mech. We get the Shootist, the Kingfisher, and the Shadowcat. Three clan mechs and the Shootist. But yeah, we got the Kingfisher and the Shadowcat from the Blackthorns source book. That's crazy. I did not realize that was the first time that we got them.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And I just looked at the mech list from 3058, and man, some of those are the most fun ones you can get to play with. So,
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's probably my favorite. That's probably my favorite. You know, we got the Kingfisher, we got the Grizzly, the Night Gyre, Supernova, Turkina, Kodiak, Black Lantern, Thresher, Hunchback 2C, the Huntsman, Shadowcat, Battle Cobra, Piranha. I mean, and the Inner Sphere mechs too.
Ultramorn, yeah.
The Shootist was in there. Yeah,
all the Inner Sphere Omnis.
Oh my gosh, all the Inner Sphere Omnis. We had the Longbow, the Nightstar, the Devastator, the Pillager. Man, Bushwhacker, Starslayer, Chameleon. Man, yeah.
Spartan. Plus, nice. Grand Crusader. Yeah, I mean, there's some.
So good, man.
And then you also go into some of the tanks. Some of the vehicles were just outstanding in that one, too.
Which we hadn't, I don't think that we had gotten any tanks since the 3028 book with all the tanks in it. So, anyway. Mm-hmm. The Shootist as the new mech, we thought made pretty good sense, and I would love to see it. And then for the vehicle, the Mechbuster VTOL, and the reason for that is because Captain McLeod, the dropship captain, pilots it to a very, you know, as it's a very important part of book one, main event. And so why not? We need another VTLL in plastic.
Right. Yep.
So just
brings it down the street. You're flying down the street and blast clan mechs.
Yeah. So yeah, that's I think that's a great force pack for them.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And again, we didn't say the charger because, hey, we got the charger already in the legendary pack. So.
Yep.
So yeah.
No need for that.
Well, Mario, I appreciate you being here, and I've taken up enough of your time already. Thanks for hanging out this evening with me.
No, no problem.
Shout out to Derek. He was in here with us earlier chatting as well, but we kicked him out so he could record. but shout out to Derek. Appreciate him. Also, too, a little bit of a reminder. We have, so myself, and I joined a couple of other podcasters to create a campaign that's going on right now, an actual, you know, kind of narrative campaign. It is, I joined with BungleTech and with, some of the guys from MechBay and a couple other people, and we've created the Global Campaign Initiative, and we have a campaign set for you all in the Civil War era, and it is on Galatea. And so it's basically you get to start a mercenary unit, kind of like with Hinterlands or the Mercenary Box set, and then you basically are playing through a Galatea campaign through all the chaos that was going on during the Civil War. And I do have an incredible piece of art. Brute, I've got to copy this and send it to you, because Nathan from the BungleTech podcast had it commissioned, and it's amazing. Check this out. There is a Mercenary Star podcast poster in the background. There's a couple. There's like basically a reference to all of our podcasts here, but Plog did the art. I sent it to you in Discord. There, do you see that?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that real quick. Nice. Okay, before we finish, we have to talk about another reason why the Black Thorns were so controversial. And that was because...
Probably the most controversial.
The most controversial, other than the fact that, hey, they have, like, it's a mercenary company that is almost a full trinary of clan tech and clan omnimex, and some people hate that, but I think it's kind of cool. So the Black Thorns, unfortunately, in canon, were destroyed in what year?
30 November of 3068 was when everything in Galadin got kicked off.
Okay.
And then somewhere between the end of 3068 and early in 3069 was when it happened.
Okay. And so that was essentially the end of the Black Thorns. Now, the problem with this is that this was done unintentionally by the line developer, not the line developer, but by the developers. I think that it was probably a combination of Fan Pro / then people for Battlecore who were writing for Battlecore at the time when they were doing fact checking. Basically, sourcebook authors had left the Blackthorns on Galadon 5. And then fiction came out for Battlecore, and Galadon 5 had basically got utterly destroyed. Like completely destroyed. A bio weapon was released. Then the planet got an orbital bombardment, and then it was nuked, essentially.
Yeah. Yes.
And so that all happened, And then later they were like, oh, oops, I'm pretty sure the Black Thorns were still on Galadin 5. And so then line developer Herbert Bays, I don't know how you say his last name, he basically came out and said, yeah, we confirmed it. The Black Thorns never left Galadon. And so they basically canonized that some of the Highlanders maybe went to go try to find out what happened.
Yeah, and the Blackthorns got listed as rogue because a contract breach or dereliction of duty or whatever. The Highlanders wanted to clear their name, sent an investigating team to find out what happened, and discovered the wreckage of the charger and what was left of a hangar.
In Galadon.
So they confirmed that. Yeah, on Galadon 5, yeah. So it was it's assumed that there are zero survivors because the planet was wiped out.
So we talked about this earlier, and I don't necessarily want the Black Thorns to be revived. I'm kind of tired of old units being revived. I didn't like it with Smoke Jaguars. I didn't like it with who else? Okay, I take that back. I did like it with the the Grey Death Legion, but they didn't.
They rebuilt. You know, Grey Death, Eridani White Horse have come back from the dead.
The Eridani was never really dead.
Yeah,
per se.
There's been a few small units that kind of pop back up.
Yeah, but regardless, I don't necessarily want them to come back. However, I wouldn't mind maybe like a shrapnel story or something of a family member, right? Because they, Jeremiah Rose married Captain McCloud at the end of the book and had two kids. They had twins. Mm-hmm. So the question, and sometime between the end of DRT, which was in like 3058 or 57, there's 10 more years of history for the Black Thorns that have nothing. So, I wouldn't mind maybe seeing something from a character, but I don't necessarily want them to come back. So, but that was that's the big controversy, right? Is that they are basically killed accidentally off screen. And that's just kind of sad.
Yep. So, it is. It is unfortunate.
But anyway, I need to let you go because it's late, and I appreciate you being here and hanging out. I'm also probably going to have to go pick up my wife soon from an event. So, Mario, you got any shout outs? Why don't you talk about a podcast you're on for a second?
Oh yeah, well I definitely need to shout out Chandler Reller. He is my co-host on the Armor Up podcast. We should be having a new episode on the Vector coming out soon. And for those of you who are chomping at the bit, we are getting real close to bringing out some of the clan equipment. So that'll be fun here soon.
I'm excited. I'll have to go back and look at your roster and see if there's something. Because I am finding more vehicles that I like. But right now, most of them are all much later in the history.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, I understand. Yeah, I would love to have you on. I also need to shout out Corey Johnston, who I have been gaming with here recently. He's been testing stuff against me, and we've been trying out some new things. And then last but not least, I most certainly want to shout out my wife, who has graciously let me take over this room for the time being. So.
Nice. Tell her thank you for letting you hang out with me tonight. So it has been a blast getting to catch up and talk with you. And once again, thank you for listening to the Mercenary Star Podcast. You don't forget to check out our sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. They have all the things you need for your Battletech gaming needs, as well as any of your hobby items, paints, all the cool stuff. I actually just picked up, I'm super excited about this, Mario. I picked up some Bear Cavalry paints from Fortress. They are really cool. They're 20 mil paints, so they're pretty big. And it's about the same price as as an army painter. They have a really nice tip, like really narrow tip on them as well. And the caps are like childproof caps too, which is kind of cool. So I don't know, but really cool colors. They're it's a new paint company, I think in Seattle. But they're basically supposed to be really good, thick pigment, and have like sustainable
good coverage
stuff. Yeah, good coverage. So nice. I heard their yellow is really good, so I picked up the yellow. So
finding a good yellow is hard. So
yeah, I'll have to let you know for sure. I haven't painted with them yet, but I'm excited too. So well, thanks again. Everyone have a great night. Mario, thank you for joining us. And we will see you next time.
All right. Thank you.